This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
America's tales about taming the Wild West rarely include women. But in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, more than 100,000 pioneering young women left home to work as waitresses in restaurants located near train platforms along the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. They were called Harvey Girls because they worked in a chain started by Leavenworth entrepreneur Fred Harvey. These women later played an important role in World War II and helped transform society's view of women's work. Filmmaker Katrina Parks tells this story in her new documentary called The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound, which will premiere at the National Archives at Kansas City on Friday evening. I caught up with Katrina Parks over the phone from Los Angeles to hear more about the film.
It has been a massive undertaking, much more exhaustive than I had ever imagined when I started. I shot my first interviews actually in 2001. I was just starting film school at the time. And I would say every 3 years after that, I would shoot another round of interviews. I would find, you know, the way there would be some kind of Harvey event, and Harvey Girls would be coming to that event, and I would kind of ride along and get to shoot more interviews with them.
I was going to ask you about that, because is that the main way you track down the Harvey Girls, through the events?
Yeah. You know, there are passionate railroaders across the country and people who are just so interested in the story of Fred Harvey and this amazing restaurant and hotel chain he built across, you know, from stretching from the Midwest all the way into California. And so there are events, you know, at railroad museums across the country. I would say, you know, there are probably yearly events. And I would I would sort of collaborate with the organizations. They would reach out to their networks, and we would, you know, invite Harvey Girls to the event, and they would come often with their families, and I would interview them and get to hear their stories. I guess as the years progressed, I also kind of started doing outreach on my own, and we ultimately, for the film, we took some of the Harvey Girls back to locations where they used to work. And that was like a really meaningful part of the process, and also, you know, brought up a lot of memories for them.
Well, you know, you mentioned Fred Harvey and people being interested in his story. He had a very tragic beginning to his life, but then he built this empire across the across the country. Tell us a little bit about Fred Harvey in a nutshell.
Well, he was an immigrant to the U.S. He arrived at age 17. At 17 years old, in New York City in 1853. Much of the information that I've gleaned over the years about Fred Harvey comes from the expert that we interview in the film, Stephen Freed, who has an amazing book called Appetite for America. And Stephen talks in his book about how Fred Harvey arrived and really worked his way up in the kitchens. And finally, he started his own restaurant, but he just went through many trials and tribulations. He had a business partner who absconded with all of their money on the eve of the Civil War. And, you know, then he lost family members in various tragic circumstances and really found himself starting completely again.
Including losing his wife and two children, right?
Yes, yeah, that is correct. It's hard to imagine, I think, these days, you know, starting again after so much tragedy. But he did, and he started working for the railroad in different capacities. He was the Postal Service went by rail in those days, and he worked worked for the railroads. And then finally, you know, he had this brilliant idea because he was suffering through what wasn't the most comfortable travel in those days, and he was eating at these restaurants where the quality of the food was terrible, and they were reserving, you know, things to the next customer. And so he had the brilliant idea of partnering with the railroad to really create a fine dining experience. And that's what he did. And the railroad that was receptive to his proposal was the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad. And they were a relatively new railroad at the time, but they were very forward-thinking, and they worked together. He basically was in charge of all of the food, and they provided the buildings and kind of the infrastructure for him. So it was a very, like, amazing partnership.
Well, you know, in this part of the country, people might be interested in knowing that the first Harvey House was in Topeka, right?
Yes.
And why did they choose Topeka as one of the first places they started?
Well, Fred was actually based in Leavenworth. And so I think it was kind of a proximity thing. And then also the company had their headquarters there as well. So it was kind of perfect because, you know, the executives would need somewhere to go to lunch and they would eat there. And so they were kind of the test of the Fred Harvey experience, and they gave it the thumbs up. And then Fred was able to expand along the railroad line.
Now, what was interesting to me in viewing the documentary, it talked about in the late 1800s, there were so few opportunities for women who wanted or needed to work. What made Fred Harvey take a chance on giving opportunities to women?
Well, in 1883, he visited one of his restaurants, and it was in Raton, New Mexico. And really, the company, as they started going further and further west, conditions became much rougher. And they found that, you know, they were in these towns where there were a lot of soldiers, in some cases Confederate soldiers from the Civil War who had left the South, and there was a lot of tension. At the time, there were many African-American waiters working, and so there was a lot of tension between these, you know, former Confederate soldiers and the waiters. And when Fred Harvey showed up at his Raton restaurant with his friend Tom Gable from Leavenworth, the place was a shambles, and they were horrified. And it's believed that Tom Gable turned to Fred and basically said, "Why don't you hire women? You know, they'll really bring down the testosterone here."
Now, it was in shambles because they were fighting?
Yes, apparently they were in fight. They were fighting. You know, the service was bad, and so yeah, the idea was to bring in women. They would bring down the testosterone level and kind of just civilize these towns along the railway. And of course, there were many single men living in the towns at the time: cowboys, miners, railroad men, and so they were delighted by this influx of women. But you know, really, for women, it was just this amazing opportunity to go west. I mean, there weren't opportunities for women to go west if you were single, you know. So you could leave home, you could live under protected circumstances, you could earn enough money to send money back to your family and help them with your other siblings. And so it became this incredible, radical thing for the time period. And many women were eager, you know, to jump on board. Of course, you know, their parents, and then often in the towns that they moved into, they would face some stigma, because at the time, waitresses were really considered, it was kind of, they were loose women, and, you know, one step above being a prostitute. So, yeah, they did face a lot of discrimination, but over time, you know, the company, the Fred Harvey Company, really helped transform the way waitresses were viewed.
Let's talk about the uniforms, because that was Fred Harvey's attempt to kind of professionalize and really raise the level of respect, I guess, for waitresses.
Yes. I mean, their uniforms often were very long. You know, in the 1880s, they were often more black dresses that kind of touched the floor. As time went on, the skirts went up slightly, but it was still, you know, always below the knee. Their arms were covered completely. And the uniform really, it conveyed a level of professionalism. So in addition to being prim and proper, it was also kind of a sign that this was really, you know, a career for women. This was an opportunity in the workplace.
Your documentary mentions that a lot of marriages took place. But what happened to the girls who got married?
Well, you're correct. The documentary does talk about how many women who became Harvey girls, they ended up settling in the towns in which they ended up working. Basically, the company, you signed a contract with the Fred Harvey Company, and they would send you out to one of their restaurants along the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad line. And so many women who went out to these towns liked living in the West, and they ended up marrying townspeople, ranchers, railroad men, miners. And when you were married, at least originally with the company, you could no longer work for Fred Harvey. So at that time, you went back to being a homemaker in most cases.
So what was Harvey's rationale that they couldn't be married? Was it mainly the fact that they had to live in dorms and just the life that they had to lead in order to be a Harvey girl?
You know, that's a very good question, and I think part of it also really had to do with the way women's role was perceived at the time. And, I think just across the board, it was perceived that women belonged at home. And so when you were single, it was one thing. But when you were married, you know, you should be starting a family, and that should be your primary focus. And so I think that was why that came about.
Now, it seems that Fred Harvey was also forward-thinking when it came to utilizing women in other roles, because he hired a woman architect, Mary Coulter, to build his new restaurants. What do you think gave him the gumption to use a woman as an architect at a time when that was probably unheard of?
Well, she was such an innovative thinker. I think that was part of it. You know, she went to art school in California, and she was working with architects there. And so she got a wire to come and work for the company. And it was through working with the company that she really began to develop also her kind of signature style over the years. And she was very interested in looking at different elements in the environment. You know, she was influenced by Native American traditions. She was interested in Hispanic traditions, and she really incorporated those elements into the architecture that she did for the company.
Let's talk about the role that the Harvey girls played in World War II. Many of them were very proud of this role that they played. Can you describe it?
Yes, absolutely. During World War II, the railroad had, you know, a big resurgence. It was the primary way both troops and supplies were transported across the country. And so the Harvey girls and the Harvey restaurants, they were where, you know, these trains filled with troops stopped, and people had to be fed, and, you know, it would be thousands of men a day. And the Harvey girls would serve the meals, and they were called the troop trains, and many romances started. There was some flirtation, of course, between the soldiers and these beautiful young women, and it was, you know, a very romantic time, and also quite sad, because people realized kind of like the importance. These men were going overseas, and so Harvey girls would end up corresponding with different troops, and in some cases, the marriages actually came out of that as well. But the women that I interviewed, who were really amazing, just talk about how they really felt like they were doing something for the war effort, and they felt very professional and felt like what they were doing was essential. They were fighting the home front of the war front, as one of them says in the documentary, and you know, after World War II, World War II opened up many opportunities in the workplace for women. And so some of them, after being Harvey girls, continued to work and found other opportunities.
And we're going to talk about that actually in a minute. Speaking of interviewing the Harvey girls, I know each woman was different. They had, you know, distinctly different kinds of personalities and interests. What really surprised you about them as you interviewed them?
I think I was just inspired by them. And I don't think I would have continued working on the project for so many years if I hadn't really enjoyed spending time with them. And, you know, across the board, I found them just to be extremely intelligent, high-spirited, and I kind of realized that this documentary was the last opportunity, really, that, you know, America, the world would have to have these stories preserved for future generations. And, you know, it became clear to me as some of the women I interviewed passed on that, you know, this was really an important tradition and just this an important history that I was preserving.
The Harveys also challenged racial barriers, particularly for Hispanic and Indian women. What do you think made the Harveys be pioneers in this area at a time when Hispanics and Native American women weren't truly that accepted?
You know, I think the Harvey Company was, as a whole, and the Harveys, Fred Harvey's descendants, were very forward-thinking. And as you know, they moved their company into the Southwest and into California. They really saw, like, the incredible value of these different cultures. And so they did open their doors to both Hispanic and Native American women. I'm sure there were women hired by the company in the 30s, but it really became, there were many Hispanic and Native American women hired during the 1940s. And that was, you know, also a result of just, you know, the need for an increased labor force as well because of all of these troop trains passing through small towns in the Southwest.
Now, as you mentioned before, the experience as a Harvey girl paved the way for some of these women to go into other businesses later on when they left Harvey. There's one that talks about going into the bar business, jewelry making, etc. What's your perspective as you talk to these women about how being in the workforce spurred them on to do other things?
Yeah, I think that's what I found so inspiring about the Harvey girls was that being a Harvey girl, it was something that really stayed with them. It was in many ways like the best thing you can imagine about a sorority. It kind of gave them an identity. It gave them confidence. They learned how to interact with people. It gave them sort of basic business etiquette, I would say, and really introduced them to high standards. And so many of the women I interviewed went on to have, you know, other careers and jobs. I think Luz Moore, for example, she became a crew dispatcher after she stopped being a Harvey girl. So this was still during World War II, but it was, you know, definitely a very innovative thing for women to do. Another woman I interviewed named Dorothy Bow went on to have a career in the restaurant business and food service. And then in the 60s, Therese Conant, she actually founded the New Mexico Organization for Women, now in New Mexico, the New Mexico chapter. And so she was kind of at the forefront of paving the way for generations to come. And, I mean, that's how I always saw the Harvey girls once, you know, I learned about their story, was they were really at the forefront of, in some ways, they were a precursor to the women's movement. And they were opening up doors to women in the workplace, showing that women, you know, could be independent and could be professional.
Well, and then we go into an era where transportation starts to change, the advent of the airplane. What are the other trends in society that started to make the kind of Harvey girl model and the Harvey restaurant and hotel business kind of obsolete?
Well, the Harvey Company, it was interesting. They were very forward-thinking, and Stephen talks about this in his book, Appetite for America, but they really, they did actually get in on the airline business, and they invested in TWA. So the company continued, but yes, they did start to face increasing pressures, I think, as there just became more pressure, as there still is today, to kind of bring down the bottom line. Efficiency maybe became the priority over high standards and wonderful service. And so, you know, as Route 66 developed, as highways developed, you know, motels began to replace Harvey houses, and fast food that you would just eat in your car began to replace the wonderful Harvey restaurants.
Now, one thing that I was interested to learn is that the airlines themselves kind of used the Harvey girl model when they started thinking about stewardesses.
Yes, they did. I mean, stewardesses were definitely modeled after Harvey girls, and you can see that in their uniforms. And also, there, you know, originally when stewardesses started, there was kind of an aura of glamour, I think, to being a stewardess, and that definitely carried over from the Harvey girls. In 1946, MGM released a musical about the Harvey girls starring Judy Garland, and that kind of definitely renewed interest in the Harvey girls. And all of the Harvey girls that I interviewed from that time period and beyond, really, they felt like ambassadors, that they were, you know, they were sharing a cultural experience, and, you know, I really liked that element.
What do you hope that people who view the documentary will take away from it?
I really hope that viewers will be inspired by the spirit of the Harvey girls, and that they'll understand the contribution that these women made as kind of precursors to the women's movement, and how they helped open the doors for future generations of women to come in the workplace. And I hope that they'll be inspired by, you know, their professionalism and their high standards, and realize that even, you know, no matter what you're doing, you can make a difference.
Are there also lessons here having to do with breaking barriers, being pioneers, and overcoming racial stereotypes?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, it really shows how companies can be at the forefront of change. I know that, you know, many of the Harvey girls I interviewed, and one of them, Hilda Velarde Salas, will actually be in Kansas City. She's in her 90s, and she was hired by the Fred Harvey Company to work at the Alvarado Hotel in the 1940s. And for her, you know, this opportunity to have a job and to work, really, it opened up all kinds of other opportunities for future generations, you know, of her family to come. She was the first person in her family to open a bank account. So I think it shows that when you give people the opportunity to work, anything can happen from there.
Well, Katrina Parks, thank you for being with us here today on KC Currents. I really appreciated it.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Katrina Parks is the director of The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound, which premieres at the National Archives at Kansas City on Friday evening. The screening is in conjunction with an exhibit at the archives called Fred Harvey, The Man, The Brand, and The American West.
If you can't listen to all of KC Currents today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives. And we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes. After the break, hear about the connection between video games and old-time radio dramas. This is KC Currents.